堂听 class.com。
新英汉口译实践，第二和，第十三单元，旅游观光。
Unit 13, Sightseeing.
篇章交传。
Passage for consecutive interpretation.
Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Have you ever been to the Grand Gorge in New York State? Today I'd like to show you around there. It's a magnificent chasm, all right, with sheer shale and sandstone rising 550 feet.Three gushing falls, one over 100 feet high. River rafting. Some 70 miles of hiking trails that, when snow blanketed, do double duty for cross-country skiers. And a forest that harbors nearly every species of eastern North American tree. Several species of wild orchids and a variety of birds from barred owls to herons. The place...New York's Letchworth State Park, home of the so-called Canyons of the East, a 17-mile gorge cut into the central part of the state by the Genesee River on its way north to Lake Ontario. Although overshadowed by New York's other wonder, Niagara Falls, 60 miles to the northwest, the 14,350-acre preserve has noteworthy attractions.In addition to a series of three falls that stair-step downriver and provide much of the gorge's usual drama, there are striking rock formations, including pillar-like cathedral rock, creations of some 350 million years of sedimentary deposits and erosion. Visitors can best view the park's centerpiece gorge from an overlook at the Mount Morris Dam.Other popular viewpoints are the stone bridge near Lower Falls, the footpaths that seem to cling to the gorge's walls, and Glen Iris Inn and Restaurant, former country retreat of the park's founder, William Letchworth. This 19th century buffalo industrialist and conservationist was said to have been drawn to the site in 1858 by a rainbow arcing over one of the falls.And soon bought land here. Letchworth deeded these holdings to the state of New York in 1907, an estate that included thousands of trees he planted on this landscape once scarred by lumbering. Today, his mansion's six guest rooms and suites are named after tree species in the park.The Seneca Indians who preceded Letchworth here called the gorge.Sagahunda, meaning Vale of the Three Falls. The canyon walls are permeated with tales about the Senecas. An upstanding Quaker, William Letchworth was initiated as a blood brother into the Seneca Nation for his ardent efforts to protect this land and its native people. Visitors claim they can still see his rainbow in the hues reflected in the spraying fallsor in the vibrant trees that attract autumn leaf peepers. This wouldn't surprise the Senecas. They believed that the sun lingered over their wild gorge, pausing to appreciate its beauty.
第十四单元，网络时代。
Unit 14, The Internet Age.
篇章交传。
Passage for consecutive interpretation.Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
The more I see of the Internet, the more enthusiastic I am. We're living through a period of dynamic change. America is ahead just now, with over 50% of the population online. Britain is next, then Scandinavia and Japan, with the rest of Europe lagging surprisingly behind.But it won't be long before everyone catches up. Especially in the Third World, the Internet will be a liberating force that will power democracy and economic growth. The lightning speed of American decision-making in today's business world is embedded in the technology. In the 1980s, American companies, desperate to fend off Japan and Germany, shed their bureaucratic aspects and returned to the knife edge of the market. Companies began to be run much more aggressively in the interests of shareholders, and that powered the adoption of new technology. The pay of CEOs was tied to stock market performance, and businessmen got rich in a way they never previously imagined. The power of greed has always been one of our American lessons for the world. On the knife edge of the market, some are going to bleed. One big innovation here is frictionless selling for cars. Buying online rather than through a big talking salesman at a car dealership. I just bought my new car through AutoBuyTel, which normally sells at 2% above what the dealer pays. I arranged finance and got just what I wanted, color, interior, engine size, in half an hour. That's great for me. But there are 25,000, mostly family-owned car dealerships in the United States, and in the next decade, most will die. It's a transition that will surely be replicated many times over. If there are losers who need protecting, there are also winners on a grand scale, many of them from ethnic minorities. New technology attracts smart people who want to get rich from all over the world. Lots of cubicles at Microsoft headquarters hold an Asian or Latino millionaire. And Yahoo was founded by Jerry Yang, who started by putting together a guide to cool websites as a bored graduate student at Stanford. He was under 30, was born in Taiwan, came to America with nothing, and his company is now worth tens of billions of dollars. Telecom costs are falling toward zero, and computer costs aren't far behind. By next year, we'll be able to store a terabyte of data for $10,000. And not long ago, the entire Internet was held to be a terabyte. The growth of the Internet in Africa, Asia, and the Far East is putting these tools in everyone's hands. And I'm confident that if people get the chance to connect, they will quickly create wealth and opportunities across 7 continents.
第15单元, 瑜伽力量.
Unit 15, The Power of Yoga.
篇章交传.
Passage for consecutive interpretation.
Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am glad that we are together to understand the power of yoga. Nowadays, movie stars do it, sports stars do it, even judges in the highest courts do it, that yoga thing. A path to enlightenment that winds back 5,000 years in its native India, yoga has suddenly become so hot, so cool, so very this minute. In America, people rush from their high-pressure jobs and tune in to the authoritatively mellow voice of an instructor, gently urging them to solder a union between mind and body. 15 million Americans include some form of yoga in their fitness regimen. 75% of all U.S. health clubs offer yoga classes. Many in those classes are looking not inward, but behind. As one serious practitioner says, some of my friends simply want to have a yoga butt. But others come to the discipline in hopes of restoring their troubled bodies. Yoga makes me feel better, they say. Maybe it can cure what ails me. Is yoga more than the power of positive breathing? Can it, say, fend off heart attacks? Can it rejuvenate postmenopausal women? By even asking the question, we provoke a clash of two powerful cultures. The Indian tradition develops metaphors and ways of describing the body as it is experienced, from the inside out. The Western tradition looks at the body from the outside in, and peels it back one layer at a time, and it believes only what it can see. The East treats the person, the West treats the disease. Yoga relaxes you, and by relaxing heals. When you do yoga, the deep breathing, the stretching, the movements that release muscle tension, the relaxed focus on being present in your body, you initiate a process that turns the fight or fight system off and the relaxation response on. That has a dramatic effect on the body. The heartbeat slows, respiration decreases, blood pressure decreases. The body seizes this chance to turn on the healing mechanisms. But the process isn't automatic. Especially in their first sessions, yoga students may have trouble suppressing those competitive beta waves. Yoga is more an Athenian endeavor than a Spartan one, says an internist. You don't win by punishing your body. Yoga is not a struggle, but a surrender. At a hospital in Los Angeles, cardiac doctors suggest that their patients enroll in its preventive and rehabilitative cardiac center, which offers yoga, among other therapies. According to the center's director, patients opting for yoga do show tremendous benefits. These include lower cholesterol levels and blood pressure, and increased cardiovascular circulation. But why so few U.S. studies tested the efficacy of yoga? There are lots of reasons. Those sympathetic to yoga think the benefits are proved by millenniums of empirical evidence in India. Those who are suspicious think it can't be proved. In March, the National Institutes of Health held the first major conference on mind-body research. The loudest voices, the most passionate and articulate spokespersons for the power of the mind to heal, come not from the research community, but from the growing number of gurus, noted an executive director at the MacArthur Foundation. Thousands of research studies have shown that in the practice of yoga, a person can learn to control such physiological parameters as blood pressure, heart rate, and respiratory function. Critics are quick to note that few of those studies were published in leading science journals. Two oddities attend yoga's vogue in America. One is that U.S. has the fittest people and most obese. Yoga typically is practiced by the fit. Exercise, the care and feeding of the body, and possibly the mind, is their second career. The folks in urgent need of yoga are the ones who are at the fast food counter getting their fries supersize, who would rather take a pill than devote a dozen hours a week to yoga. Here's another peculiarity. This ritual of relaxation is cresting at cultural moment when noise and agitation are everywhere. Will you do yoga?
第十六单元，求职谋略。
Unit 16, Tactics for Job Hunting.
篇章交传。
Passage for consecutive interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
If you are finding it tough to land a job, try expanding your job hunting plan to include the following tactics. Set your target. While you should always keep your options open to compromise, you should also be sure to target exactly what you want in a job. A specific job hunt will be more efficient than a haphazard one. Schedule ample interviews. Use every possible method to get interviews, answering ads, using search firms, contacting companies directly, surfing the web, and networking. Even if a job is not perfect for you, every interview can be approached as a positive experience. Follow up. Even if someone does not hire you, write them a thank you note for the interview. Then, some weeks later, send another brief letter to explain that you still have not found the perfect position and that you will be available to interview again
if the original position you applied for, or any other position for that matter, is open. Do this with every position you interview for, and you may just catch a break. Make it your full-time job. You can't find a job by looking sporadically. You have to make time for it. If you're unemployed and looking for a new job, devote as much time as you would to a full-time job. If you have a job while you're looking, figure out an organized schedule to maximize your searching time. Network vertically. In the research phase of your job hunt, talk to people who are on a level above you in your desired industry. They'll have some insights that people at your own level won't have, and will be in a good position to hire you or recommend you to be hired. Keep your spirits up. Looking for a job is one of the toughest things you will ever have to do. Maintain your confidence, stay persistent, and think positively, and eventually you will get a job that suits you. Having learned something for job hunting, let's approach this question from the employer's point of view and look at the qualities they seek. Almost every career requires such skills as listening, speaking, reading, writing, decision-making, researching, reasoning, creativity, persuasion, leadership, interpersonal communication, and organization. In addition, a number of characteristics that may be important for specific jobs: achievement, aggressiveness, ambition, dependability, discipline, honesty, initiative, motivation, people orientation, persistence, responsibility, self-confidence, self-starting, sensitivity, sincerity, tenacity, and tough-mindedness. The way you acquire these skills and behaviors is to a great extent up to you. Without them, no matter how bright and knowledgeable you may be, landing a top job is extremely difficult, if not impossible. The most likely way to obtain these skills and behaviors is through courses, reading, internships, part-time or full-time employment, extracurricular activities, and participation in community functions. Knowing what an employer is looking for in a potential employee can help an applicant to prepare for an interview. An interviewer for a major corporation was asked these questions. What specific skills are you looking for in applicants, and how do you identify these skills? He responded, "Most important for us in the way of skills is the ability to communicate. Can people speak clearly? Can they articulate the kind of person they believe themselves to be? In what kind of work situations do they perform well? What are their strengths and weaknesses? We want to know about the personal qualities of the individual, so I try to ask questions to draw them out and attempt to find out if they have a sense of themselves. What I'm looking for is an ability to verbalize an idea in a clear, simple, understandable language. I'm also looking for the ability to listen attentively and then to be able to respond to an idea or thought that has been presented to them. If they do have good communication skills, they will be able to do this logically and succinctly. I am looking for creativity. Can they be spontaneous? I will ask some off-the-wall questions just to see if this throws them. How do they respond in these tough situations? Can they be creative with their answers? This is very important when they are out in business situations with customers. They will have to respond to very sudden changes and problem-solving situations that they are not necessarily familiar with, and I want to know if they can handle them. What we look for the most are personal qualities: assertiveness, self-motivation, drive, ambition, and a competitive instinct. They should be high achievers and want to work hard. I can usually tell about these qualities from the way the person presents himself or herself and some of the activities they have engaged in. I pick up things from the applications and resume. how they have written them, and the kinds of things they say. How they present their experiences is often very informative. For example, an assertive person will say, "I can do these things," and "I decided on this course of action." Whereas a more passive person might say, "These are the experiences I have had." All of these things describe the person in some way.
第17单元, 公平交易。
Unit 17, Fair Trade.
篇章交传。
Passage for consecutive interpretation.
Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
When people buy a stock, most do so through one of the securities exchanges or marketplaces for stocks and bonds. These marketplaces are commonly called stock exchanges, and they provide a meeting place for both the buyer and seller. To understand why such securities or stock exchanges are important in the purchase and sale of stocks and bonds, consider what would happen if you and everyone who wanted to buy or sell securities had to find a buyer or a seller. How would you know what a fair price for the security is? More importantly, how would you find out who is interested in selling that stock to you or buying it from you? In order to handle this marketing problem, securities exchanges sprung up. These exchanges are nothing more than locations where stocks are bought and sold. And since there is a common meeting place for these transactions, people interested in buying and selling go there or send their representatives. The result is a very systematic market process, where transactions are handled in an orderly manner and the operations are both supervised and regulated by law. In this way, the buyer or seller is ensured that the best price is secured and they are not shortchanged or cheated in any way. Assuming your broker works for a major stock brokerage, the order would be telephoned directly to a company clerk on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. The clerk would hand the order to a member of the exchange who is a partner in the brokerage. This individual would then go to the appropriate locale on the trading floor and ask for the latest quote on IBM. Let us say it is $70 to a quarter. This means that someone is currently bidding $70 for the stock, and another party is willing to sell at $70.25. If your broker wants, a sale can be struck at $70.25, since the order calls for purchase at the current market price. More likely, however, your broker will bid $70.125 and hope to save you an eighth of a point or $12.50. And it is likely that another broker with an order to sell will show up and accept the bid of $70.18. The two brokers will then initial each other's sales orders and see that the transaction is relayed to the exchange employee known as the reporter. The reporter sees that the sale is reported, and a few minutes later it will come out on the ticket tape.
第18单元，企业管理。
Unit 18, Business Management.
篇章交传。
Passage for consecutive interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Today I'd like to cite a case illustrative of how a small business eliminated the risk of a takeover. The company of Harper & Grant Limited was started 38 years ago by John Harper and Alexander Grant. Alexander Grant died many years ago, and his son, Peter Grant, who is in his 50s, is the present managing director. The chairman, Mr. Harper, another of the two men who founded the company, died at the end of December. His death causes a crisis in the firm. Harper & Grant is a private company. A private company can be formed by two or more people. They sign a memorandum of association, stating the number of shares they agree to take, and their signature is followed by the signatures of anyone else, often members of the family, who will also take shares in the company. In a private company, there cannot be more than 50 members or shareholders. The authorized capital of this company was originally £5,000, but the company has grown, and each £1 share is now worth about £100. Each share carries a vote at a shareholders' meeting. Wentworth's, a large and successful firm which manufactures mattresses for beds, own 10% of Harper & Grant shares. Mr. Wentworth Sr. was a personal friend of John Harper. His firm now has an opportunity of buying some of the shares formerly belonging to Harper. Peter Grant wants to stop Wentworth getting as many shares as he owns himself for fear of upsetting the voting power at shareholders' meetings. If Wentworths owned 51% of the shares, they would have a controlling interest and would be in a very good position to take over Harper & Grant completely in time, making it a fully owned subsidiary. Peter Grant is personally jealous of Alfred Wentworth and does not want him to own too many of the shares. He raises a loan, that is, he arranges with the bank to lend him money to buy enough of the shares to outvote Wentworth's. It is a personal loan. It is also a short-term loan. He does not only have to pay back the money he borrowed, he also has to pay interest on it. In this case, 9%. This is the rate of interest. The bank manager asked for security. He wanted to hold the deeds of Grant's house. But a building society lent him money long ago to buy the property, and every year he repays a proportion of the loan to them, plus interest. By now, a lot of this loan has been paid back to the building society. Probably for this reason, the bank agreed to a second mortgage. If Grant could not pay back the loan within the time limit, his house would have to be sold and the first mortgage paid up. Then the remainder would go to the holder of the second mortgage, in this case, the bank. Very few banks will give an unsecured loan, one without any security or guarantee they will get their money back. So Peter Grant, the next chairman, postponed the possibility of a takeover by buying 250 more shares in the company.
第19单元, 寻求合作。
Unit 19. Looking for Partners.
篇章交传.
Passage for Consecutive Interpretation.
Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor for me to speak at one of China's great academic institutions, one that is helping to revive and maintain your country's historic tradition of leading the world in science and technology, and one whose alumni are to be found in positions of leadership throughout the country. Here, as in so many other places in China, no visitor can help feeling the excitement of a great country developing at a breakneck speed, and every day opening up new vistas of knowledge and opportunity to its citizens. You can be really proud of your country and what it has achieved in the last 25 years. As I look out over the young faces in this audience, I cannot help envying the international students, more than 1,000, I am told, from over 50 countries, who have the privilege of sharing your learning experience here. It reminds me for a moment of my own student days when my country, Ghana, was newly independent. We felt we were suddenly reaching out to the world and making new discoveries every day. But then I also remember that times of rapid change can bring pain and confusion, even destruction, as well as progress and excitement. the more rapid and exciting it is, the more change calls for careful management and wise, humane leadership. Order and stability have to be preserved, but without choking off the freedom to inquire and experiment and express oneself. Since, as you young researchers know better than anyone, knowledge and science have a vital role in national development. And technical expertise needs to be harnessed to the development and security of society as a whole, so that it not only creates greater wealth for the few, but enables all citizens to feel safer and more prosperous. The development of such a great country as China cannot happen in isolation. It affects the whole world, and it draws you into new relationships with other parts of the world. Increasingly, your economy depends on exchanges with other countries, both imports and exports, of both goods and capital. Foreign investment plays an essential role in your growth, while your holdings of foreign currencies and your management of your own currency are coming to play a vital part in the international monetary system. This means that you have a stake in the development and prosperity of the wider world, and your security, too, depends on international peace and stability. Your government shows that it understands this by the role that it plays in the United Nations and elsewhere. And increasingly, Chinese citizens are called on to take risks and make sacrifices in the interests of global security. It was impressive to see, in our newspapers the other day, pictures of Chinese policemen in blue helmets preparing to join the United Nations mission in Haiti, an island buffeted by both human and meteorological storms, which is literally on the far side of the world from here. So I am here, in part, to express the world's gratitude. Clearly you in China have understood, as your saying goes, that we all share the same breath. Human misery knows no frontiers, and nor should human solidarity. China, with its remarkable experience in development and expertise in security, can make a leading contribution to this vital global breakthrough. That is why I am so glad to be in Beijing today, and to have the chance to speak not only to your government, but also to you here, in one of China's great centers of innovation and creative thought. You young, educated people have so much to contribute to development, and to meeting the global challenges that I have spoken about: safeguarding world peace and security, developing friendly relations among peoples of different faith or culture, and achieving the Millennium Development Goals. You already have a well-developed network of solidarity between richer and poorer regions within China, and I know many of you will be serving in poor areas after you graduate. I hope some of you will think also about serving in other parts of the world, where your skills may be even more desperately needed. I urge you all, and your contemporaries throughout China, to commit yourselves to finding answers to our century's great challenges of poverty, disease, and environmental degradation. I say to you, as I have said to students in the United States and many other countries, go out and make the world better. But I have spoken long enough. Now it's your turn. If you have questions, I will try to answer them. But I hope you may also have comments so that I can learn from you. Thank you.